Missions. I want to quickly give you 9 ways that you can go into the field. 9 different ways. As we put feet to our faith, respond to the Great Commission. Number 1, all of us are required to be everyday witnesses. Lifestyle evangelism. The largest group of missionaries, in a sense, are people who are involved in witness and outreach and service in their own locality, as well as we trust supporting and encouraging others to go to areas and other situations. So we're talking about E0, evangelism in your Jerusalem. Involved in daily lifestyle evangelism with the shopkeeper, with the person at the petrol tank, and the person at the hospital and shops and neighbors. We just engage in conversations which sometimes will relate to the gospel and asking their needs and praying for them and offering them literature and giving gifts as needed and encouraging and helping as they are in need. So, for example, when any new person moved into our neighborhood, my wife would bake some things and we would go and deliver it to them and welcome them to the neighborhood. On Christmas days, we'd often take some baked things to the local police who were on duty on Christmas Day, showing love and concern for them. There's many ways you could do it. Before Christmas, going into Red Cross Hospital near us and taking some gifts to the children and praying with them by the beds. I mean, any child is in hospital over Christmas, their situation's got to be pretty bad. And some of them didn't even have family members in town. And so there's different ways we can be witnessing in our own neighborhood and area. Some people might just go and distribute tracts at a traffic light or go door to door or put some gospel tracts in people's letterboxes. There's many ways we can do everyday witness, and everyone who's a Christian can do this. Number 2, you get tent makers, what are often called a passport missionary or professional who has skills that gives them a passport to countries or situations where Christian workers may be restricted or forbidden, or where full-time cross-cultural witnesses are not allowed. So a tent maker would use a secular employment like an engineer, a doctor, a teacher, to have a means of working in a restricted access country. Tent makers, they might be an oil refinery engineer, they might be a carpenter, they might be involved as an electrician or computer programmer, or just a teacher teaching English as second language, but they are able to get into places like China or Saudi Arabia, Libya and Pakistan with their skill, but then are they able to be witnesses as well. And then you get missionary partners, the traditional missionary working with churches officially recognized by denominations or the government. So a lot of the work I do is as a partner. I go in and help, in this case, the Episcopal Church of Sudan, the largest church in South Sudan. And here's Bishop Bulindulli receiving me into membership in the Episcopal Church of Sudan. Even though I'm a Reformed Baptist, they saw me as one of theirs, and so I was made a minister of the Episcopal Church of Sudan. I'm a partner with different churches, Baptist churches in Zambia, Episcopal churches in Sudan, and so on. And then you get these veterans, well, like my father-in-law, Bill Baffin, 67 years in missions. People who have already served another culture and then moved to a third culture or returned to their own culture, they continue to use their skills and experience. But these don't necessarily have to be in their 60s and 70s. They might be in their 30s, 40s, or even 20s, have a lot of experience already. At the moment in our mission, we're very short-staffed, and we had some people leave town and move here and there. And I turned to 2 old missionaries that we know. They're in their 70s. They were first farmers. I knew them already back in the 1980s. And when they were farmers in KwaZulu, but when their children were mostly grown up and their farm was expropriated, they became missionaries. They went to Sudan for 13 years, ran a school in Khartoum for 13 years and survived until the secret police chased them out. And then they went on to Jordan and Egypt and 16 years missionaries in the Middle East. These are veterans. We brought them in. And these people in their 70s, they have so much skills and insight and graciousness. And so we should not overlook the veterans in our community that we could maybe bring in and help. Then there's apprentices, people who go for a short period to another culture to contribute and to learn so that they can be more effective back in their own culture. And I've always tried to apprentice my sons, and here's my younger son, Calvin, who I've used many a time presenting Evangelism Explosion, gospel presentations, Ten Commands, Apostles' Creed, even on national TV in Zambia, because he is very good at memorization. He could really speak well on these. Then there's underground witnesses. People who live and work in situations where any expression of faith is suppressed. Just think of any of the seriously Muslim Sharia law countries. How do you work in a place like North Korea? How do you work in a place like Saudi Arabia? Well, it so happens there are hundreds of thousands of Christians working in a Muslim world, from the Philippines and so on, because the Arabs don't want to do work. They bring in people from the outside, many of whom may be Christians, to look after the children, to teach in the schools, to run the oil refineries, to run everything. In fact, in Saudi Arabia, I don't think any Saudi Arabians really work. They've got people from all over the world coming to do their work for them because they've got lots of money because of oil, but that's how we get Christian witnesses into the areas. Then you get international students. Well, there's so many students from all over the world going all over the world that you can reach people from virtually any restricted access country in your community who are students there. But then you might be, or somebody in church might be a student who can go and study in a restricted access country, for example, at the University of Cairo. And so they use the period of training to get alongside other students for evangelism and discipleship, and perhaps to prepare themselves for further mission responsibilities. So when you work with international students, not only are you witnessing to them, for example, my son-in-law Hunter had a ministry to students in Phoenix, Arizona before he came here. He got to know Muslims, and he brought Muslims to Christ who came from restricted access countries in the Middle East, but by inviting them around for meal, coming into home, getting them to join the Bible study and prayer meetings, after a while, these Muslims, not only are they learning the gospel, but you're learning about them and their culture and the kind of questions they ask and concerns they have. And then there's short-termers, people who lend a hand and also receive on-the-spot orientation, again with a view to further involvement in missions at a later date. Here I've got an American on one side and a Canadian on the other. They came and they served with us for a couple of years and not only learnt a lot, but were able to help us in many different goals. And then you get short-term reliefs. People who enable long service personnel to take a break. So say you are, maybe you're retired or whatever, you've got time on your hands for whatever reason. And so you know that a mission station needs a handyman, you're a handyman, or an electrician, you're an electrician, or a teacher, and you're a teacher. And you volunteer, say, I've got 3 months to spare over the summer holidays perhaps. Could I come in and do that job so that one of your people can take a break? And they'll often be delighted. Yes, our man hasn't had a break in 8 years. If you could come in and do his classes or duties for the next few months, then that person could go back home, raise more support, visit the family or whatever. And so short-term reliefs is also a way of helping in long-term missionary goals. So those are some ideas on how you can go. So there's a multiplicity of ways of going. But let me also address culture. Historically, Christians have adopted one of five approaches concerning culture. The one is Christ is against culture. And you can think of the Mennonites, for example, in America. They deliberately restrict themselves, the Amish and the Mennonites, to 19th century technology. Horse and buggies, no electricity, no fridges. They will do things manually. They won't have motor vehicles and things like this, especially the Amish. And these people have phenomenal work ethic. I mean, here is what they call barn raising. When a person gets married, all the families in the neighborhood will come together and one day raise a barn for him on his new farm. And they can do it because these are some of the best carpenters in the world. But the Amish people believe our culture is so polluted, they just want to be separatists. And so there are people who just, Christ is against culture in their mind. And so the monasteries are an example of that. The Mennonites and Amish communities, they retreat from the culture as separated brethren. The world is Babylon and Egypt, and we must withdraw from the world. So historically, there have always been Christians who've thought Christ is against culture. Then you get The Roman Catholic view of the Christ of culture, where they confuse creation and redemption. Christ is seen as the Messiah of their community, and it's to fulfill their political aspirations and hopes. For these people, there's hardly any distinction between Christ and culture. You can take most Roman Catholic groups, liberation theologians, utopian socialists fall into this category, where God is like our tribal God, and he is on the side of our culture, and they've confused culture and Christ. Then you get the view of Christ is above culture. We're in the world, but not of the world. Now, these are centrists. They're not against culture. They're not trying to accommodate culture. They are just saying, well, Christ is above culture. And then, fourthly, you get the Christ and cultures in paradox, like two lines of a railway line. Culture and Christianity are two different realms. They're not necessarily antagonistic. They're not identical. They're just different. So Christians can participate in culture, work, service, pleasure, arts, government, family, but not as a means of grace. Culture is just part of what it is to be human, not merely of being a Christian. So that's a fourth view of culture. Well, the view I would hold to, and I think most Christians should, is Christ is the transformer of culture. Christ is Lord over all creation and over all areas of life. And Christ is the Word made flesh. God with us, Emmanuel. God took on human form. So Christians must present the gospel and exercise leadership in the culture. Culture is a distinct but related part of Christ's universal reign. Work, whether agricultural or scientific or educational or political, artistic or commercial, are important activities through which Christians can bring about a transforming of the culture to the glory and the honor of God. We believe Christ transforms culture. While human activity can never bring about salvation, it can serve to attract non-Christians to the gospel and bring about civil righteousness and justice and compassion in human relationships. So St. Augustine, the great African church father from what today is Algeria, he taught this. Professor Martin Luther taught this. John Calvin, John Knox, the Reformer of Scotland, they all taught this. Christ transforms culture. And so the Reformers have been very strong always on trying to change culture, transform it. Some Calvinists were called Puritans because they want to purify society, purify motives. And this means that this position has produced some of the greatest culture, like cathedrals and Handel's Messiah and great works of art, because Christ transforms culture and we channel our energy and our creativity in a way that will honor God. So, Christ, the transformer of culture, that is the position that I would hold to. Any questions on culture and Christianity or on the nine different ways of going into missions? Questions, comments, complaints? Yes.
My comment about culture as yesterday, I read a certain thing. He said, cross a culture, cross across the culture of the world. And he said, the culture is a fabric of one society. My comment is, I want us to be aware the way we use the posture and posture, the way we use our posture to address. Something can be, it can be a hindrance, the way we communicate with the society. Because in your language, the way you use your posture, maybe using your hands, pointing like this, in your culture, it might be similar good, but to others, they will interpret in another way. So you violate the condition or the atmosphere so as your message will be not acceptable. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me point out, we're surrounded by Christ transforming culture here at Back to the Bible Mission. Back to Bible Mission has got a culture. A culture of getting up early, responding to the bell or the railway sleeper getting gonged, prayer, singing, choir, scripture verse of the day, response to the sermon, the lectures, the emphasis on devotions, the emphasis on also the gardening, improving the area, not allowing there to be litter in the area, having posters and scriptures, the artwork on the walls around you. All this is culture. So this is part of the BBM culture. God-centered, Bible-based, very prayer-focused, going on outreach as evangelism. So in BBM, you can see the culture. You can see the idea of having Wednesday will be students and staff having meals together, the Tuesday evening having the staff having meal together. That is also part of a culture. The culture has been deliberately designed to bring people back to the Bible and focus people on Christ and prepare people for missions. So that's a culture. Now, in Cape Town, for example, my family very much supports great concerts. And so each year we want to go to Handel's Messiah. In fact, normally either my daughter or my wife were in choir singing Handel's Messiah, either in the City Hall or in Strand Street Lutheran Church, the oldest Protestant church in the Southern Hemisphere still operating. And everything from the way how we, at our mission, we start today with hymn singing. And we have Bible reading before lunch. We have prayer before the day begins. We have our devotions on Wednesday afternoon. The way we operate, the decorations on the walls, the scriptures, the posters, the pictures, all of that's part of a culture. The cross that's very prominently on the outside wall, the Christian flag that flies on the flagpole. Right from the beginning, when you come to our mission, you'll see we have a certain culture and we've got a way of doing things. And our camps and our courses, we emphasize that. And the fact that women go first for the meal and that the men must wait back, and that's part of our culture. So every society has a culture, whether they know it or not, whether they're identified as not. But your culture encompasses the books you read, the music you listen to, the way you behave, the traditions you've got, the holidays you observe, and ceremonies, rituals, like the fact that you will bring the flags of different nations forward as part of your opening ceremonies and your graduation services. All of this is part of your culture here. And you can think of your home church, and you can think of school, and you can think of your village and area. What you do and what you celebrate and how you celebrate, that's your culture. And we understand where we're coming from, but now we've got to understand the ones we're going to. And some things in every culture need to be preserved, and other things need to be changed, and some things need to be stopped. So, for example, one of the cultures in England today is to get drunk and to fight with the supporters of another football team. And after almost any football match, the supporters of one team will fight the supporters of the other team. Now, that's their culture. It's not a good culture. You could say that the culture of some people is to loot and riot. The culture of those people over there is to go and stone people who convert to Christianity and so on. So, just to get you thinking wider as to what it is. And some people think, well, our culture is right. But all cultures are fallible. There is good in the worst of us because we're created by God. There's bad and evil in the best of us, but there's good in the worst of us. Why? Because we fall in creation. The good is in the worst of us because we're created by God. There's bad in the best of us because we've fallen, sinful, depraved. And so in every culture, there's some things good because of creation. There's a lot evil because of the fall. And there's things that need to be scrapped, and there's other things that need to be redeemed, and there's other parts of it that need to be purified and improved. And there might be new cultures that need to be brought in. Like when I was converted, obviously, I had no Christian culture in my background whatsoever. But now, as a Christian, I had to work out the way how we expressed our faith in our family, which included Bible reading at mealtimes and hymn singing and story time with my children and how we celebrate Christmas and Easter and the Lord's Day and so on. So, other questions or comments? Who's got the mic?
Can we do mission through media? For instance, during the season of COVID-19, what was your condition during this time? Did you manage to do mission? Can we do mission using media?
Yeah. The quick answer is yes, we can do missions through media, but not completely. So, look, if we can do a lot on the internet, and during the first 5 weeks, forced lockdown by the government, all we could do was on Medium. So I would be doing my radio programs, recording them on Audacity and sending them by WeTransfer to Radio Cape Pulpit and Radio Tigerberg. We would be doing Zoom meetings with our people. We were putting more PowerPoints and videos on the web. We're digitizing our tracks. We're making more of our books available as e-books and print on demands in different countries. So we used the hard lockdown to improve our digital platforms for media. But, you know, you can't fulfill the Great Commission only by media. Media is a nice assistance. Tools can help, but the heart and soul of missions is feet on the street, boots on the ground, putting feet to your faith, door to door, face to face, one on one. You can't fulfill the Great Commission only by media. How do you baptize people? By Zoom. How do you have the Lord's Supper effectively remotely? How can you have real worship only virtually? You can't greet one another with a holy kiss or with a hug or handshake on the internet. So I think some people got lazy, lockdown lethargy, through the remoteness. The remoteness is good for a person who's shut in, who's sick, who's in hospital, a person who can't travel for whatever reason at that time. Maybe they've got a broken leg and so on. But to make that the norm is wrong. Forsake not the assembling together of one another. So I would say it's super important that we, as much as possible, get away from this insanity, this, I call it the lockdown lunacy, masquerade madness, salvation by vaccination, COVID cult. You know, get away from it. This was a New World Order globalist strategy to shut down churches, to silence churches, to even shut and sideline and silence the pastors and slow down or stop the gospel advance. More damage was done to the church during this last year's lockdown than I think even the anti-Christian persecuted church Joseph Stalin or Mao Zedong could have ever dreamed of. So, yes, for the 5 weeks, our mission did as much remotely as we could. But when they went to level 4, we fully opened everything. Everything is back to normal. We operated at 100% after that because it's just insane. I will not allow any government to stop our mission. And we used those 5 weeks of hard lockdown to really get stronger on online. And I think it's good to use that. But it's only to help. It cannot be the central core of any mission. Other questions, comments? Yes.
Okay. In our culture, in our culture, we normally, when we lost somebody, this verse that says in Matthew chapter 5, verse 17, Christ fulfilled the law, demanding that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Mm-hmm. So normally, in our country, when they want to use us to perform the culture, they use this verse. Can you please help me?
Certainly. So our Lord Jesus is saying He didn't come to destroy the law and the prophets; He came to fulfill it. Now, that's not the culture. That's the law of God revealed through Moses. So people who think Christ redeems us from the curse of the law and therefore we don't need to worry about the law. No. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The law of the Lord is a schoolmaster to lead us to Christ that we can be justified by faith. The law of God is not bad. But the law of God cannot save you. It can only point you to Christ who can save you. The law is the closer kinsman, but the law cannot save. It's Boaz who became the kinsman redeemer who points to Christ, who actually saves us. So from the book of Ruth, that we are not saved by the law, we're saved by the kinsman redeemer who is Christ. So, when people come and say that our culture was being lifted up by Christ, no, Christ changes everything. Behold, I make all things new. And Christianity has made everything new. The world into which Christ came had no respect for human life. Babies could be thrown to the wolves, literally. If you didn't like your child, you could throw them outside city walls. That wasn't a crime. It was a crime to adopt or save that child. The church broke the law to save children by adoption who were being literally thrown to the wolves. It's a world where people had blood sports. They didn't just watch people pretending to kill one another like we do in films today. They actually watched gladiators killing one another in the arena. That was the entertainment. They watched literal murder. Blood sports was entertainment. Even children in the stands watching this. They had hideous public executions like by crucifixion. Slavery was so common that 2/3 of Athens were slaves. More than 1/3 of Rome were slaves. And 1/3 of the Roman Empire were slaves. And the whole society was so debauched. It was normal to have multiple wives. It was normal to have wife swapping. It was normal to have orgies. There was such immorality, idolatry. And so that culture was sick, sordid, vile, and condemned. And Christianity brought a totally different culture of charity, kindness to strangers, which was unknown before the time of Christ. And so many of the lovely traditions, do you know Christianity is the only real singing religion? Other religions don't have a tradition of congregational singing. Hindus, Buddhists, Muslims do not come together to sing songs. They have rituals. They have a chant, maybe. But the singing of hymns and songs is uniquely Christian. The kind of art that we've produced through Christianity, very distinct, and some of the greatest art in history, the kind of architecture, like the cathedrals. But it's not only that. Christianity has brought about a whole culture of kindness to strangers, of charities, of hospitals, which is why it's symbolized by a red cross. So Christ transformed culture from the beginning. And the suggestion that, oh, he came to reinforce the culture, not true. The culture of the Jews was women shouldn't be heard. Women weren't allowed in the synagogue. And yet Jesus spoke to women directly, had women amongst his disciples. Even though in that culture, no man could talk to a woman who wasn't a close relative. And so Jesus talking to a woman at the well and so considered a scandal by that time's era. Jesus broke with the culture of the Jews and their hostility to the Samaritans. And then he gives this parable about the Good Samaritan. And everything Jesus did was shocking to the culture of the Jews. That's why they crucified him in the end. Condemned him to the Romans to crucify him, I should say. So understand that there's always some good in every culture because we are created by God. But there's always evil in every culture because we're fallen. And so Christ must redeem and change the culture. There's a lot in our culture that's wrong. The culture of my ancestors, the Vikings, was to hack people to death and drink their blood out of skulls. I mean, I could say, well, that's our culture. It's a bad culture. They had to stop that. The fact that in England, they'd get drunk and beat up the supporters of another football team, that might be the culture, but it's not a good culture. That needs to go. Once you're Christian, the culture of most people was when their people died, they burned their body. But Christians have always believed in burial. That's our culture. Joseph was buried, and he wanted his bones even to be brought back to Israel, which they were hundreds of years later. Abraham buried his wife Sarah. Abraham was buried. Noah was buried. Jesus was buried. Burial is Christian. Cremation is pagan. I know a lot of Christians do cremation, but it's not biblical. It's, in fact, a direct rejection of the resurrection of the body. We're meant to treat the body well. That's why Jesus was buried. That's why the bones of Joseph were brought back into Israel. It's King David's grave you can still go and see. And it's not Christian to go for paganism. So the moment the Vikings, my ancestors, were saved, they stopped burning their dead and they started burying them. And so that's part of a Christian culture. Why? Because of the resurrection of the dead. And by the way, do you know every grave is meant to be buried in such a way that the toes are facing towards Jerusalem. And the idea is when the Lord returns to the Mount of Olivet, that the dead in Christ will sit up immediately facing in the direction of Christ. And so when we were doing the burial for my wife, that's where we had to position it, so that on the day of resurrection, when God raised the body, now we know that the spirit is already in heaven, but when the bodies are raised, the bodies will raise sitting upwards facing, in our case, north. If you're in Russia, south, towards Jerusalem, and so on. In America, they'd have to face east. In Japan, they'd have to face west, because Christ said he will return on the Mount of Olivet, from the same place where he ascended. So, I mean, we've got good culture, we've got bad culture, we've got culture that can be redeemed. And it's my joy to keep trying to find new ways in my family that is in keeping with the Christian culture. The way my family, when I was being brought up as a secular person, celebrate Christmas is so different from the way we as Christians celebrate Christmas. We've got a whole new culture. The carols we sing and the scriptures we go through, and everything is just Christ-centered. And again, Easter, because of the resurrection, we celebrate Easter very different from people who think it's only about the Easter bunny. Christmas, for us, is not about Father Christmas, but that's the culture of some people.